The area where we were heading in Eastern Europe was known for its radioactivity. We had received reports of strange animals, things that looked like they were hatched from a mad scientist's laboratory. I didn't know how much of it I believed, because some of the descriptions the survivors gave sounded more like Wendigo and dogmen than any real animal. I figured that, in the heat of the moment and under attack, their minds had likely twisted the true form of the animals, horrifying as they were, into something truly nightmarish. There were three of us heading into the dark Eastern European forests. My friend Dimitri, who was originally from the country and knew the language, his girlfriend Anna, and myself. Everything seemed mundane enough as we flew into the country and handed over our passports. There was no sign of the horrors waiting ahead. The first towns we encountered looked idyllic enough as we drove through them in a rental car. Isolated farmhouses with cows and chickens dotted the landscape. Plentiful fields of wheat, potatoes, and corn stretched out on all sides of us. The black earth here was fertile, I knew. As we headed deeper into the radiation zone, however, the houses and farms all started to look abandoned and dilapidated, the fields barren and dead. "Christ on a cracker," I muttered, more to myself than to my friends. "This place looks like it suffered through the apocalypse." "It did," Dimitri said grimly. "A nuclear apocalypse." "I feel like the biblical one is far more optimistic than the true apocalypse will be. In reality, there will be no rapture. No victory of light over darkness. If there is ever a World War III, every major city will be consumed by nuclear fire. It will throw buses and cars thousands of feet into the air, spilling out bodies onto the burning skies. Entire streets will collapse, trapping countless millions under the rubble." "That's a cheerful thought," Anna commented, her dark blue eyes staring out the window. I saw the reflection of white eyes skittering through the brush outside, small animals that disappeared in front of the approaching roar of the engine. "How far is it?" I asked, feeling car sick and anxious. "The winding roads here curve through countless hills. It reminded me of driving through parts of Northern California before, when I had retched out the window." Anna and Dimitri seemed unaffected, though. I cursed my stomach, which was always turning traitorous towards me. "It's a while, man," Dimitri said. "This country is huge, probably another 3 or 4 hour drive, and then we have to start walking." "Well, good thing we left before dawn," Anna said, stifling a yawn. She had a can of some cheap Russian Red Bull knockoff, some fluorescent green cap that smelled like chemicals. But she drank it as if it were the finest French wine. I gazed out at the dark forest that passed us on both sides, wondering what kind of sights lay ahead in this land of the damned. The sun rose early over the gently rolling hills and black earth of Ukraine, sending its rusty streaks of blood across the sky. The going had been easy so far, except for the constant car sickness I felt. I took a few pills of meclizine, wishing that I could have smuggled some weed gummies through customs. But here, cannabis was illegal, and I was not eager to see the inside of an Eastern European prison, where lunatics like the three guys, one hammer maniacs, and the chessboard killer lived in hellish conditions. "Holy shit, would you look at that?" Dimitri said with awe and wonder oozing from his voice as the car braked abruptly. I looked up quickly, my stomach doing flips. But what I saw laying across the road instantly brought me back to the moment. Dimitri then pointed a tattooed hand at the sight. "Is that real?" Anna asked. I could only shake my head as we all stared at the dead bear that was laying across the cracked road, its dead eyes staring straight through us. I noticed immediately that the bear had extra paws on its arms. Blood-stained claws jutted sharply out of its four paws, each seeming to have seven fingers. Its feet looked stunted and twisted, like the roots of a tree. An extra arm stuck out of the front of its chest, a pale white fleshly growth emerging from its sternum. The mutated limb looked malformed and boneless, causing a sense of revulsion to rise up as I gazed on it. It flopped gently in the heavy wind that swirled down the surrounding hills. "Well, I guess the rumors are true," Dimitri said, his eyes as wide and excited as a child. "Can you imagine what other kinds of things must be lurking in these forests?" This is going to make a really awesome documentary. Anna nodded, playing with a small handheld digital camera she took everywhere with her. She wanted to make a video that would finally go viral on the internet and help her gain some recognition for her work. "I'm going to record everything, including this," she said excitedly, brushing a lock of blonde hair behind her ear as she opened the door of the car. Dawn had risen overhead, radiating the first warm rays of a bright summer day. After a long moment, I followed her out. Dimitri stood at her side, his dark eyes wide. He ran a trembling hand over his shaved head as he looked down at the enormous bear. Anna zoomed in with the camera, kneeling down before the still beast. Her finely formed fingers shook with excitement as she drew within inches of the corpse. I wondered how the bear had died, as I didn't see any signs of injuries on the creature's body. The next moment, I saw it blink. I backpedaled away, giving a hoarse, guttural shout of warning. Anna was busy staring at the screen of the digital camera, scanning it across the bear's extra fingers and limbs. But the panic that swept over Dimitri's face showed me that he, too, had seen it. He grabbed Anna's arm, dragging her back with sudden fury. She stumbled, her legs crossing under her. She crashed into him and they fell back together. A moment later, the bear came to life, its bones cracking as it twisted its head to look at the three of us. It swiped a mutated paw at the place where Anna's face had been only a moment before. I heard the sharp claws slice through the air like switchblades. The bear's head ratcheted over to glare at us. It gnashed its teeth as silver streams of saliva flew from its shaking head. With a primal roar, it leapt up off the ground. I turned to run back to the safety of the car, but I nearly tripped when a pale figure streaked out of the forest right in front of me. It looked like something conjured up in a nightmare. It was naked and bloated, its skin white with bulging pink cheeks. It looked to have a combination of human and pig features, and yet it ran upright like a person. Its irises were blood red, its pupils huge and excited. Its beady eyes flicked over to Anna, and a low, satisfied growl erupted from its wide throat. I watched the muscles work furiously in its body as it sprinted towards her. Before either Dimitri or I could react, the pig thing grabbed Anna around the neck, its sharp black fingers digging deeply into her skin. She squealed like a strangled rabbit as it dragged her away into the dark Ukrainian forest. Its pink lips pulled back in an excited grimace, revealing the sharp fangs underneath. I heard its guttural growls fade away rapidly. It sprinted much faster than a person, its hooves slamming the ground over and over at a superhuman speed. "Hey," Dimitri called excitedly, taking a step forward. "What are you..." A giant bear paw with too many gleaming claws then smacked his leg out from under him, sending him flying. I only stood there, shell-shocked and amazed, as Anna disappeared into the trees. A single moment later, the bear rose to its full height, roaring at us. Streams of spit flew from its mouth as its rancid breath washed over us, breath that emanated a smell like roadkill and infection. I put my hands up, flinching, expecting a blow that never came. When I looked up, the bear had gone back on all fours. It ran in the path the pig creature had gone, its white boneless extra limb hanging limply from its chest. "What the fuck?" Dimitri cried on the ground, rocking back and forth. I then came back to life, running over to his side. I saw a deep gouge mark sliced through his blue jeans. Bright streams of blood lazily dripped from the claw marks on his left leg. "We need to get help," I cried, shaking him. His eyes looked far away and confused, as if he didn't fully realize what was happening. "We need to go back and get the police." "The police?" he asked, laughing. "The police here aren't going to do anything. You think they're going to travel into the radioactivity zone just for a missing person?" He shook his head grimly before reaching out a hand to me. "Help me up. There's a first aid kit in the car. We need to bandage this up, and then we're going after Anna." We had no way to call for help. The phones this far out in Chernobyl didn't work, and there were never any cell phone towers built in this silent land. After Dimitri had disinfected and bandaged his legs, he rummaged through the trunk, looking for weapons. "Damn, there's nothing good here," he said despondently. "Some bear mace, some knives. What good is any of that going to do against these mutated monsters? We need an AK-47. I nodded in agreement. Too bad we're not in the U.S., I said. The only guns you're going to get around here are the ones you take off the bodies of Russian soldiers. Yeah, if only, he muttered sadly, handing me a large folding knife. We have one canister of bear mace, three knives, and a tire iron. Not exactly an arsenal. I really didn't want to go into those dark woods, but thinking of Anna being tortured or murdered made me feel sick and weak. I shook my head, mentally torn. Here, take the bear mace too. I'll take the iron and a knife. He continued, forcing the black canister into my numb fingers. You ready for this? Absolutely not, I said. I think we should try to find help. If we both go out there and get slaughtered, no one will ever find her. Well, the nearest town is 2 hours west of here. By the time we get help, her trail will have gone cold. It will take at least 5 or 6 hours to get any rescue out here. We need to do this, and we need to do it now. If you don't want to come, I get it. I'll come, I said grimly, my heart pounding. Let's get it over with. Dmitry had a sad history. As a child living in Ukraine, he had been kidnapped by an insane neighbor and kept in a dirt pit outside for weeks, wallowing in his own piss and shit, slowly starving. He said the man would throw a stale crust of bread or a rice cake into the mud and human waste every few days. Dmitry would pull the food out, wipe off the feces, and eat it. I shuddered, remembering the horror stories he had told me. I knew he had a personal reason for making sure Anna was not subjected to the same endless suffering, even if it meant his own death. The bear and the big creature had left a clear trail of broken brush and snapped twigs, snaking through the forest. Side by side, we moved cautiously ahead, constantly checking our backs. But we saw no signs of movement and heard nothing. Up ahead, the trees abruptly opened up, letting golden sunlight stream down. Blinking quickly, we left the forest behind. We walked out into a field in the middle of a valley surrounded by tall, dark hills. Grass and weeds rippled in waves as the wind swept past us. Formed in a semicircle in front of us, human skeletons lay endlessly dreaming. They stared up into the vast blue sky with grinning skulls and empty sockets. Some still had putrefying strips of flesh and ligaments clinging to the bones. Animals had scattered some of the bodies, but others lay complete, like corpses in a tomb. Human skulls, leg bones, and arm bones lay scattered haphazardly across the field. Their surfaces yellowed and cracked with age. It looked like a bone orchard. What are we looking at right now? I whispered, furtively glancing around at the field of bones. An insane part of my mind wondered if they might rise from the dead and come after us. Compared to what we had already seen in this place of nightmares, it didn't seem that far-fetched. Dead bodies, Dmitry said grimly. Like victims of the nuclear accident? I asked. He shook his head, pointing at some of the fresher corpses nearby. Their throats looked like they had been ripped out, the bones of their necks showing deep bite marks. The one nearest us had its skeletal fingers wrapped around a glass bottle with a piece of paper rolled inside and a cork inserted into the top. I knelt down, prying the fingers back with soft, cracking noises. I uncorked it and took out the paper. It felt thick in my hands, like some kind of handcrafted paper from the old days. The cursive flowing across the sheet looked like it had been written in a quill pen with actual ink. In confusion, I read the letter aloud. Rules to survive in the Hellskin Nature Preserve. Rule number 1. The cult known as the Golden Butchers has been kidnapping women to breed them with the pig creatures. They worship the offspring that results from these unions as gods. If a member of your group gets taken, you will find them in the living farm at the end of the forest. Rule number 2. If you encounter Mr. Welcome, the enormous pig god with the eyes on his forehead, you must not let him touch you. Rule number 3. The red snakes can only see while you're moving. If you encounter them, stay still. Don't even breathe. Breeding women with pig creatures? Dmitry cried, horror washing over his face. We need to find her, but where do we even start? I looked through the field trying to see any sign of tracks, but it looked like hundreds of animals had gone through this field recently. Paths of tall, crushed grass crisscrossed the enormous length of it, some of them worn down to black dirt and stones. I just shook my head, having no idea. A distant scream rolled its way down the surrounding hills. It came from our left and sounded very much like Anna. Dimitri's eyes then turned cold. Without looking back at me, he started frantically running towards the sound. It faded away within seconds. "Wait up," I cried, sprinting as fast as I could. His freshly shaved head gleamed as he disappeared into the trees. Gripping the open buck knife in my hand, my knuckles white with tension and fear, I followed after him. We wandered for hours through the woods, never hearing a second scream to guide our path. We both hoped that we were going in the right direction. A small deer trail winding through the brush opened up, heading up rocky hills and clear streams of water. Sweating and nervous, we traveled for miles and miles, rarely talking. A few times I tried to get Dimitri to slow down. "How do you know you're going in the right direction?" I asked. "We've been walking this trail for 5 hours and haven't seen a thing." "Well, this was the direction the scream came from," he said weakly. "Where else would they go? They would want to travel quickly with a hostage, right? They would take a trail." I didn't point out that there may be other trails and that we had absolutely no idea where we were going. As we reached the peak of a mountain, I pulled out a small portable Geiger counter that we had taken along for the trip. The radioactivity here was high, much higher than normal background radiation. I didn't know how far we were from the nuclear power plant at the center of all this, but at a certain point, it would become too dangerous to keep moving forward. Dimitri was next to me, chugging a bottle of water when a shriek rang out below us. It sounded almost animalistic, but had a strange electronic distortion. Amplified to an ear-splitting boom, it echoed through the trees. Much quieter roars answered from the forests all around us in response, the cries of bears and other predators. These sounded much closer, though. "Psst," a pile of thick ferns said to my left, shaking suddenly. In Ukrainian, the ferns continued by whispering, "Hey, you." I jumped, swinging the knife in the direction of the brush. Watching the blade shake wildly in my hand as fresh waves of adrenaline surged through my body. Dimitri was by my side, his eyes wide and wild. He glanced over at me, nodding. He had the tire iron raised like a tennis racket, ready to strike. A moment later, a little boy crawled out. He was scarecrow thin, his face smudged with dirt and filth, his dark eyes sunken and lifeless deep inside his small head. He had black hair and a nose like a little twisted lump in the center of his face. It seemed like it had been repeatedly broken. He didn't look older than 10, but he looked so emaciated that it was impossible to say. The rags and tatters he wore barely covered his body, and the boy was almost in his Genesis suit. "Come out," I said grimly. Dimitri's eyes bulged from his head. "Don't kill me, please," the boy whispered in a cracked, choked voice, his accent giving all his words a guttural tone. "Take me out of here. My mom and dad brought me here. They were part of the Golden Butchers. But a couple months ago, they got sick and died from all the poison in the water and food." "Who are you, kid?" Dimitri said, reaching down and pulling him up to his feet. I watched the boy closely, the bear mace in one hand and the knife in the other, looking for any sign of sudden violence or betrayal. "My name is Philip. I come from the farm," he said, pointing vaguely towards the tallest peak in the area. "You can't see it from here, but it's over there." Dimitri kneeled down until he was eye to eye with Philip. "Can you take us there?" he said. Philip's eyes then teared up, but he slowly nodded. "If you will take me with you when you leave, I will show you," he said, crying now. "But it is a horrible place. It is the place of Mr. Welcome." Philip guided us to the living farm, saving us a great deal of time. He navigated the forest like an experienced hiker, seeming to know the area from the smallest clues. A split, fallen tree, or a tree with a whorl like an eye, or a sudden curve in a babbling brook. It saved us a great deal of time wandering through the woods, where everything looked exactly the same to me. "There," he said, pointing through a break in the trees to the farm. The entire top of the hill was cleared of trees and brush. In its place stood a nightmare. The farm was the closest place to hell I have ever seen. The top of the living building peaked over the tall trees surrounding it. It had something like a bell tower on the top of it. almost like a church might have, but instead of a bell, it had an enormous bloodshot eye. The eye had an iris as red as a dismembered heart. Its pupil was dilated and insane. From here, the eye looked to be about the size of a church bell and had no eyelids. Strange white filaments like those of a slime mold surrounded it, trailing down into the building. I wondered if this was the optic nerve for the great staring eye. The rest of the building was as black as eternity, windowless and imposing. It had a brutalist architecture, all sharp angles and steep slopes. I watched the building and the eye closely. To my horror, I realized that the entire thing was alive somehow. The eye constantly spun in its place, staring out over the surrounding hills like the eye of Sauron. The building constantly breathed. "Welcome," a hushed, distorted voice cried. The words seemed to come from the breathing and living walls of the farm itself. "What is this, kid?" Dimitri whispered hoarsely. "Where's Anna?" Philip shook his head sadly. "She's inside, with the other breeders," he said, the fear and terror evident on his face. "They keep them chained in cages or bound in the basement until the time for the ritual comes." "And when is that?" I asked. He looked up at the sky and the fading light. We had somehow wasted nearly an entire day already. Night was coming and we hadn't even seen Anna yet. "It's sunset," he responded. Dimitri nearly jumped at that. "Sunset? It's almost here. We need to go now," he cried. I almost wanted to laugh. "What are you going to do? Stab that enormous building with your knife? We need a plan. Maybe we can burn it down or something." But my words were cut off by the roaring of the building. Its scream echoed over the hills. It was immediately answered by countless others, including one that came only a few dozen feet behind us. I grabbed Dimitri's shoulder, my panicked eyes flicking in that direction. "There's something," I started to say when the brush cracked under a heavy weight. Looking up, I saw something horrible stalking us from behind. It looked like a pig walking on all fours with a fat, bloated body, but it was the size of an SUV. Its eyes were like the eye in the building, blood red and dilated. All over its body, hundreds of sharp teeth grew out of its skin, covering the pink flesh like tumors. The creature almost looked like a porcupine with all the sharp points of fangs projecting from its body. For a moment, its eyes widened as we stared at each other. They instantly narrowed as the pig roared again and gave chase. It gnashed its teeth, opening and closing its mouth in a frenzy of bloodlust. In its mouth, too, the teeth grew wild. Hundreds of razor-sharp teeth of different sizes grew from its gums, tongue, and lips. "Run," I cried, grabbing Philip's arm and hauling him off the ground. The boy had a natural survivor's instinct and immediately started running by my side, away from the approaching creature. We broke out into the massive clearing where the living farm stood. I saw that the building had only a single door in and out, a black barn door that stood wide open. I heard Dimitri's feet pounding the ground behind me. The heavy thuds of the approaching creature drew louder by the second. "In the barn," I cried, not having time to think. It was the only possible place of safety here. I sprinted faster than I ever had before, towards those doors as if they were the entrance to paradise itself. Without slowing, I ran into the building, trying to slam one of the doors shut behind me. Dimitri grabbed the other. With the creature only seconds away, they started swinging shut. Philip's small body pressed against my legs as he came forward, using his meager strength to help me. The door was extremely heavy and hard to move. The building itself looked like it was 6 or 7 stories tall, and the doors to the barn nearly a third of that height. With a tortured creak, they slammed shut. A single breath later, something heavy thudded against the other side, as if it had been hit by a battering ram. But the door held. Quickly, Dimitri and I grabbed a large board leaning against the wall and stuffed it into the brackets on both sides of the door, locking it from the inside. I noticed how cool and dark it was in here, as if I had walked into a cave. I turned, taking in the interior of the living farm for the first time. At that moment, I had to repress a scream welling up in my throat. Hundreds of imprisoned women lined both sides of the barn. They were stacked one on top of another like prison cells. Wearing filthy, blood-stained rags, most of them looked silently down on us with dead, haunted eyes. I noticed the majority were in their 20s or 30s, but their eyes looked centuries old. Along the back wall, an enormous pig lined it, positioned like Jesus on the cross. It stood as tall as the barn itself. Extra eyes covered its face, a dozen of them positioned all over its cheeks and forehead. From the top of its head, I saw the white filaments rising up into the bell tower. Its many blood-red eyes focused on us, as still as death. "Welcome," it hissed. Its limbs were chained to the wall, enormous rusted links intertwined around its body, preventing Mr. Welcome from moving. "Anna," Dimitri cried, looking around frantically. There was no one else here that I could see except for Mr. Welcome and all the hostages. "Anna, where are you?" "Don't scream," Philip said in a tiny, fear-choked voice. "Please don't scream." But it was too late. As Dimitri's last words faded, trapdoors built into the black floor of the barn sprung open. Dozens of mutated bears and pig creatures crept out, their predatory eyes scanning us with hunger and anger. "Oh, God," Dimitri cried, running back to the door at my side. Frantically, the three of us pulled the board up and dropped it to the fleshy floor with a clatter. As hisses and growls erupted all around us and the predators creeped towards us in a semicircle, the barn door flew open. It was night now, the darkness creeping in like a descending curtain. No pig creatures awaited us on the other side, but something worse seemed to be creeping out of the forest. I saw snakes the color of clotted blood slithering ahead. Each one was the size of a tractor trailer, yet they made very little noise. An occasional hiss would rip its way through the air, but they hunted silently. As I stood in the field in front of the barn, a no man's land of hellish proportions, the certainty of death fell over my heart like grasping skeletal hands. I looked down at the little boy sadly. He gave me a faint smile, even though his eyes were terrified. "I think we're screwed," Dimitri whispered by my side, and I only nodded. But at that moment, I remembered the rules, and an idea came to me. "Just stay still," I said. "Don't even breathe." Philip and Dimitri looked at me strangely. Then recognition came over their eyes. Dimitri nodded, and then we all played statue. The predators from the barn were only 30 feet behind us now, crouched down and hunting us like a cat with a mouse. Yet the snakes also closed in, their black slitted eyes gleaming with a reptilian coldness. As the mutated bears and pig creatures leaned down to pounce, I closed my eyes, waiting for the inevitable. I felt a sudden rush of air all around me. The snakes flitted forward in a blur, their massive jaws unhinging. Two fangs swiveled out like switchblades, fangs big enough to impale a police car. Drops of clear venom fell lazily from the ends. Keeping my eyes closed, afraid to even breathe or blink, I listened as the sounds of tearing flesh and screaming animals resonated all around me. After about 30 seconds of this, everything went deathly silent. I don't know how long we stood there like statues, but eventually, someone touched my shoulder. I opened my eyes, unbelieving. Dimitri stared at me intently. "They're all gone," he whispered. "All except Mr. Welcome. It's now or never." I nodded, and together we moved into the farm. The trapdoor still lay open. I could hear very faint sobbing coming from under the building. Dimitri was afraid to make a sound. Together, the three of us went down to investigate. We found a dark basement covered in hay. Torture tools covered the walls, iron maidens, brazen bulls, crosses, and an entire universe of whips, saws, grinders, pliers, razor wire, and other bloodstained tools of the trade. In the corner, we saw Anna, her hands tied to the wall. More rope bound her feet and legs. We ran forward. When Anna saw Dimitri, she collapsed into a nervous wreck. "Oh my God, you came. Please get me out of here right now," she whispered. "They're coming. The ritual will start soon." Without a word, we started cutting the ropes, freeing her quickly. "We need to be as quiet as possible," I told Anna. "We can all get out of here. Let's go." As we ascended from the basement back to the main floor of the living farm, the repetitive, metallic voice of Mr. Welcome kept repeating the same insane mantra. "Welcome," it said. Once the four of us were all together, however, it changed. "Welcome, thieves," it hissed. its voice deepening and turning into a demonic gurgle. "That is my breeder. You will have to find out what happens to thieves." I could only imagine all those bloodstained tools in the basement, and I shuddered. Mr. Walcombe inhaled deeply, his massive fleshy body ballooning. With a predatory roar, he ripped the chains out of the wall of the living building. Orange pus and dark clotted blood dripped from the holes. The barn breathed faster and deeper, the broken walls vibrating and shimmering as new life and pain flowed into them. Mr. Walcombe started moving towards us like a grinding juggernaut, walking on two legs like some sort of pig god. His many lidless eyes never looked away from us. The frayed optic nerves leading to the bell tower broke with a sound like snapping rubber bands. Dimitri looked at me with great sadness in his eyes. "Get away," he whispered. "I'll distract it. Just get Anna home no matter what." Before I could respond, he ran forwards towards the abomination, the small, useless knife raised in one hand. Mr. Welcome saw him coming. He tried to swipe at Dimitri with a sharp, black hoof, but Dimitri ducked, running around the back of him. He gave a battle cry and started stabbing the monster in the back of the leg, which probably hurt it about as much as a toothpick. But it provided a distraction. This time, Mr. Welcome spun his whole body, falling back to all four legs to deal with this nuisance. He used his massive snout to smack Dimitri hard, sending him flying across the barn. He hit the wall with a bone-shattering thud. Dimitri's skin immediately started to blacken as if he were being burned alive. His eyes melted out of his face as he screamed, clawing at the dying patches of necrotic tissue spreading across his body. Within a few seconds, his screams faded to agonized groans. He tried to crawl back towards us as he died. "Run," I screamed, grabbing Anna's hand and forcing her to sprint by my side. Philip was already one step ahead of us, frantically trying to reach the shelter of the forest. I heard the ground shake behind me as Mr. Welcome drew near, moving much faster than we could ever hope to go. And I knew we would never make it. "Keep going, no matter what," I yelled at Philip and Anna. They kept running, the animal instinct to survive now foremost in their minds. I had to suppress mine, and I turned to face the creature, the evil pig god known as Mr. Welcome. In hindsight, I don't know if God or some divine power had interceded, but the bear mace was probably one of the few items that could have saved us at that moment. Mr. Welcome had many eyes, and now that he was running on all four paws, his face was within reach. As my heart palpitated wildly, I raised the bear mace and sprayed at his dozen eyes. He didn't slow, and I had to jump to the side to keep from being trampled. The air whooshed past me as if a subway car had gone by. But a moment later, Mr. Welcome gave a roar and not one of anger and hunger. This was a roar of pain and uncertainty. Blinded, Mr. Welcome frantically started running in circles, knocking down huge swaths of trees. The ear-splitting racket as he pulled the forest apart crashed over the surrounding landscape. Without a moment of hesitation, I turned to follow Philip and Anna back to the car. We told the police about the barn and all the hostages, but they claimed they couldn't find it, and we never heard anything more about it. Looking back on the experience, I now know why Chernobyl is a restricted zone, and it isn't just because of the radioactivity. There are some things that hide under the surface, some rules that should never be broken, in rotted places where no eyes should roam.